charging through the midfield. Thomas, it's up for grabs now. Thomas.
Now Bold. And it's Tony Adams put through by Steve Bold. Would you believe it?
Still Nasri.
Looks like Shannon.
Welcome to another edition of Fusillade, where I am temporarily out of pithy comments to make at the beginning of podcasts. I am Thomas Wachtel.
I'm Paul DeBruyler.
I'm Aiden Gibson.
I'm Ted Harwood.
And yeah, that was a bit of a punch in the mouth, wasn't it? By that, I mean all of last week. The Milan game did not go as we hoped. In fact, it went about as badly as it possibly could have. 4-0 loss, Koscielny injury. Anything I'm forgetting that horribly wrong in that game? I feel like somebody else got hurt too.
No. No. It was just bad overall.
Yeah, just a big crap sandwich. And then on the weekend, we were hoping for a recovery against Sunderland and instead got a 2-0 loss. Francis Coquelin.
And Ramsey and Sebastian Scalacci.
But Scalacci getting hurt doesn't really matter.
No.
I was actually just about to say that we got to see some of Scalacci playing, which was probably not the worst part of that game, but it was certainly right up there. I didn't get to see the Milan game, actually, because I was at work. I'm not really going to have a whole lot to say about it. The Sunderland game, on the other hand, was really just awful, 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 awful all around. Basically, I felt like everybody on the team was bad. There were a couple exceptions to being completely bad. I feel like Alex Song and Bakary Sagna were just kind of bad rather than being totally awful. Aiden, why don't you give some thoughts while I recover from my minor shell shock?
Well, I learned that I'm pretty bad. I'm not very good at making predictions, and Ted's premonition was way off. I also realized that our second best attacking player is now back in New York, which is a really depressing thought. And I also learned that, you know, I thought that we were going to play with width and on the counter attack against AC Milan, and it ended up that Arsene Wenger played Thomas Rosicki wide left. And I didn't mind playing Thomas Rosicki. I minded the fact that he was playing wide left. We did it against Barcelona last year in the Champions League, and he was utterly ineffective in that position. He was good when he played through the middle against Blackburn and against Sunderland, whereas against Milan, he tried hard, but, you know, he was kind of ineffective. I mean, the whole team was ineffective, but I really felt we just didn't have anything going for us. We played straight through the middle. Milan are really good defending through the middle, you know. When you have almost all of your team through the middle, you know, it's hard to get past them. And, you know, defensively, we were just horrible. Koscielny and Thomas Vermaelen looked like they hadn't played for months, which they hadn't. Kieran Gibbs looked like he hadn't played for 4 months, which he hadn't. Hasn't. And, you know, Alex Song had made... Well, Thomas Vermaelen had probably his worst game ever for Arsenal. Alex Song probably had one of his worst. I mean, he didn't make a single tackle. Zlatan Ibrahimovic kept on coming into his area and just dictated the entire game. And, you know, I guess Alex Song read John Cross before because, you know, John Cross was saying how crap Ibra is, and it turned out that Ibra isn't crap at all, which most of us knew, but it took a while for the little Englander press to get that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally a lot more upset about the Sunderland match because there's really no excuse for it. At least AC Milan is a top European team this year. I mean, they're really, really good. It's not that losing to them wasn't the problem. It was losing 4-0
right, and
looking awful doing it that was the problem.
Right. I mean, you know, if we got out of there losing 2-0, I would have thought, okay, it's not a great result. We don't have an away goal. But you know what? At home, we have a chance. We could win, you know, 2-0 at home going to extra time. We could do that. Now, I mean, you know, it's impossible.
5-0 is probably a bit much to ask, though, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, even 3-1, even 4-1 would have been, you know, better. At least 4-1, you think, okay, so you need to win 3-0. I mean, that's not likely, but it's not impossible. You know, there's absolutely no positive to take out of the game against Milan, and there's no positive to take out of the game against Sunderland, but, you know, that's the kind of week we had.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's the positive is that in neither game did a meteor hit the stadium, or I guess anything like that. Actually, for those two games, that might have been a positive.
It couldn't have made those two pitches any worse.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was thinking about. What you were saying about Rzyski is, I think that something that happens to us sometimes in the Champions League, which is one of the. I don't want to start this. But it's one of the few complaints I've had about Arsene Wenger constantly as a manager, which is I feel like when we get into European games, he overthinks a little bit. And I think maybe when we saw the pitch, the thought process was the wide areas are crap. Let's try to play through the middle, where we should have just said, look, it's crappy out wide, but just play our game and see if it works. But I don't know. It appears as if there were punji pits and landmines strewn about on the wings. So I don't know. Maybe we're just trying to keep our team from getting blown up. Paul, do you want to build on that? Or I guess build on that, maybe not
the build right on phrase blowing for this. Stuff up.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of intelligence to add to this because, again, I didn't see the Milan game either. I was kind of following it online while I was theoretically working. But as far as the Sunderland game goes, I do have to say Sunderland played well. I mean, it's not all that Arsenal were pure shit, although they were pretty bad. Sunderland were very well organized. They were very efficient. They were very clinical and ruthless, not just with scoring, but, you know, they passed well. They kept their shape really well. So while I wouldn't go so far as to say there's no shame in losing to Sunderland, I'm not surprised that Arsenal lost. What I am surprised is how badly they played in that loss.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
Yeah.
I know it's not as easy as, you know, have a bad game, and then there's the cliched motivational speech, and the music swells, and then the team comes out and destroys the other team, and everybody's happy, and the movie ends. But I was expecting some sort of response, and I think everybody else was too, and that's what frustrated me the most. The one, I guess, I don't know if I wouldn't call it a positive, but the one thing that I will take from that is that it was the FA Cup and not the league.
Yeah.
You know, and that's.
Yeah.
People lost sight of that. I lost sight of that. We've all lost sight of that a little bit. If you have to have a loss like that, and that's not to say that they'll never lose like this again, but it was the FA Cup, which I love the cup, but again, they're out of the cup. Fine. Great. As long as performances get better on Sunday against Spurs, that's all I care about at this point. You know, that will erase the whole week, but it'll definitely help.
Certainly, when we were having our discussion about the Champions League or the FA Cup, and we were all saying the Champions League, I don't think any of us was thinking we just don't want to be in the FA Cup at all, so screw it. I mean, once we essentially lost that Milan tie in the first leg, my thought was, all right, let's win this FA Cup game and stay in that, so at least we have something.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't manage that. So you're right, it is a bit of a not really a positive, but it's a helpful thing that now we're basically in one competition for the next 3 months or so, and we just have to concentrate on that, and it's fourth place or nothing now, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm sorry to interrupt, I don't know if a lot of people actually listen to the Guardians podcast, but you really should, because it's a good podcast, and Sid Lowe was making the point this week about Barcelona, and how their league form is suffering, but they're still a potent force in the Champions League. And I think, even though the situation is obviously different, I think Arsenal kind of have the same thing in that it's unfortunate they're out of the FA Cup, because a cup run is something you can focus on immediately. It's a goal that you can achieve immediately. You win and you advance, and that's great. The league is this target that's still several months out. And so it's hard to get yourself up for that. And, you know, like I say, it's manifesting itself a little differently with Arsenal than it is with Barcelona, but I think that there's a big part of that. And so in that sense, it's kind of too bad that they did go out of the FA Cup.
Yeah. So, Ted, how'd you like to put a neat bow on the crap sandwich that was the past week?
I don't have too much to add. One thing that I thought was really astute that Michael Cox pointed out, and of, you know, that's sort of redundant because most of what Michael Cox points out is pretty astute, on zonal marking, was that it was always going to be the case that Milan was going to outnumber Arsenal in the midfield because they were playing with a diamond, essentially, or sort of playing a weird sort of 4-5-1. It was a sort of a weird formation, but Arsenal made it even worse for themselves because they neither pressed Mark von Bommel when they didn't have the ball to get the ball back, nor did they sit back and focus on marking Zlatan Ibrahimovic or Kevin Prince-Boateng. So they essentially were two midfielders down in the midfield because at any one point, both of those guys were more or less free to do whatever they wanted. So if you're essentially ceding the entire midfield at that point, then you're not going to beat anybody, much less Milan, doing that. So it's, I mean, the Milan game and was sort of the perfect example of the type of match that Arsenal have had this year where they somehow refused to press at all and really pay the price because of that. I mean, they didn't have any possession really to speak of for long stretches of time. They didn't force Milan to make any mistakes. They were making all the mistakes. And you compare that to, say, how we played at Stamford Bridge, where Arsenal were pressing constantly and Chelsea kept screwing up and had no midfield advantage to speak of. And, you know, it's just strange. It's like, it's a strange sort of like almost like weird schizophrenia that this team has where some matches they just look like they're just running around and pressing constantly and playing to the best of their abilities, and other matches they just sort of stand there.
And I think that also has a lot to do with the physical situation of our players. And, you know, let's face it, we have played a lot of games recently. This is a very small squad. So the fact of the matter is that we have this small squad. It's hard to press. It's hard to press when you're away from the Champions League. I think the fact that the Sunderland pitch and the Milan pitch were both heavy and cutting up and really bad, I think that made them more tired. And I think that, you know, that's probably a reason why we don't press. I think we saw that last year where throughout the first half of the season, we were pressing a lot. We looked really, you know, that's one reason why we weren't that bad defensively. Towards the end of the season, we stopped pressing. We looked a lot more open. And, you know, we started conceding a lot more goals and losing games.
And that's exactly it. The thing is that, you know, a lot of teams, it's not like Milan press a ton.
No.
But they're so well organized and they keep their shape so well, especially at the back, that it doesn't, that they can play that way if they need to.
And also Milan have a deeper squad than we do.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, that's like a caveat to all of this, of course.
Yeah.
Those problems are like well documented at this point.
Sure.
But, you know, Arsenal don't have, if Arsenal aren't pressing well, Arsenal also aren't any good at keeping any kind of defensive shape, really, for a purported, you know, top European side at this moment in time. I mean, they could be, but, you know, players like Alex Song and Aaron Ramsey sort of drift around a lot. And they're not always, you know, Song's not always shielding the defensive back four. Arteta's not always shielding the defensive back four. Ramsey is usually so far forward that he's not really in any position to defend too much. So if Arsenal aren't pressing well, it's like, well, then they're just kind of a shapeless mass.
and you know, I think another thing to point out is the fact that we had six centre-back partnerships in our last three games. We had Koscielny, Mertesacker, we had Song Koscielny, we had Koscielny, Vermaelen, we had Giroud, Vermaelen, Joru Song, Scalacci Joru. I mean, you know, that's... These are guys who aren't playing, who don't have a rapport with each other, who don't know what the other player's doing. So we looked a lot more solid when we had Mertesacker and Koscielny, and maybe, you know, maybe that was one reason. As I said earlier, Tom Vermaelen and Koscielny, they just didn't look... They looked like they had never played together before. They had no idea where each other was. They were so, you know, they were so wide. There was so much space in the middle. You know, it was just... It was mind-boggling how bad we were defensively, and... Maybe we should have set, and I think we should have set up differently. I think we should have set up a lot deeper and tried to counter, but, you know, we didn't, yeah. And we paid the price.
The weird thing is, and this is, I mean, I love Thomas Vermaelen, and I think he's a good defender, but something I've been noticing lately is that Juraj was drifting weirdly when he was playing in the middle, but then when he was on the left against Sunderland, he kept cutting in. And it seems like at this point, no matter which position he's in, he's often in the wrong position, if that makes sense. Like, he's trying to do the other job when he's doing the one he should be doing the one he's doing.
Right.
And like, he was trying to play center back from the left. And I kept seeing him drift in and thinking, don't do that, stay left.
And
I'm playing left back right now.
I think there is something to say for the fact that he's been, you know, moved around so much in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I'm not trying to like to criticize him really. I'm just sort of noting it as a thing that's happening. And obviously, I mean, we don't really have much of a choice, especially against Sunderland. Our left back got hurt. We had to put him there. There wasn't another. We didn't have another one on the bench. Unless you're going to try and play Scalacci on the left.
The thing about Thomas Vermaelen is that for all his other virtues, his real main weakness has always sort of been his positional sense. He's never really been, even like when he was playing center half a lot, he's never been a guy who's always standing in the right place. A lot of times he would kind of get caught forward too far, especially last year. And it's just... He's good at almost everything else.
Well, I mean, I think Michael Cox said he's too impetuous, and I mean that would make sense. And I think we saw that a little bit with Koscielny last year. He's changed that. So, I mean, he likes to win the ball back quickly, but he also, I think, he has a greater positional sense. I think playing with Per Mertesacker made him realize that, hey, if I go out, if I miss the ball, if I go too far out, I'm going to leave a lot of space for someone who's not very quick. So I think that, you know, they can work as a partnership. I mean, they better work as a partnership because that's all we have left. And I think they will work. But I think the fact of the matter is that you've had these guys not playing together, and I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting point that I never thought of until you just said it about the Sunderland game. Like, almost all of them looked like they'd never played together.
Right.
It wasn't just the defensive partnerships or whatever. It was an entire team that wasn't even close to being on the same page, which is very disconcerting to see.
Yeah, it really was weird. And I don't think we weren't great before. But it really went off the rails when Coughlin left. And I don't think it was really because Scalacci was playing. I mean, obviously, I don't think he had a great game because he pretty much never does. But I just think that losing that bit of shape that we had really disrupted the team.
I thought we actually looked good for the first 7 or 8 minutes.
No, I
Coughlin was still playing. I thought we looked okay.
I did too. We were passing really well, and you know,
Gervinho had a sort of a half chance from a nice Mikel Arteta like ball. Yeah, I mean, we've been talking a lot about the defense, but you know, I mean, I think Arsenal's bigger problem right now is scoring goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, in our last three games, I don't think we've looked like scoring. You know, we've looked like scoring maybe twice. And,
yeah.
You know, one of our goals was a long shot. One was a cross. And, you know, we looked really impotent up front. And, you know, the guy who created probably our best, who scored our goal and created our best other chance, he's gone. So, you know, I don't know what that tells you about the state of our team, but, you know, if Thierry Henry became that integral to our attacking play, you know, it doesn't bode well for the rest of the season. And, you know, Aaron Ramsey has looked dreadful. And, you know, goal aside, he has looked absolutely dreadful in recent weeks.
And to be perfectly honest, so is Van Persie. He hasn't done a thing since the Blackburn game.
Yeah.
Like, he just has been nowhere.
He's been really well marked by center backs. And, you know, we brought Henry on against Sunderland, and we mentioned this last week. You know, he changed the game. He was able to get in front of the markers. So even though they were tracking Van Persie, Henry was able to do that. Arsene Wenger tried to do that again this weekend when he brought in Theo Walcott, but you know, Theo Walcott's not Thierry Henry. You know, he hasn't played striker since 2008 for Arsenal. And it definitely looked like that on Saturday. He looked kind of clueless, you know, and it raises a bigger.
To be fair, he was being thrown into an awful team.
I don't think there was
any saving that game at that point.
And
we could have put Messi on, and we probably still would have lost.
Probably not, because Messi's pretty good. But I just think it was completely.
Well, I mean, he's pretty good, but so's Van Persie. I mean, at some point, yeah, your good players have to do things, and if they're not, I mean, it's not like you sort of reach a point where I'm not sure that a game can be saved. And I think by the time Walcott was on, I think we'd hit that point where
But I mean, I believe we were only one goal down when he was brought on. He wasn't brought on when it was 2-0, because he was brought on with 35 minutes to go.
I'm not really talking about. I'm not speaking logically. I'm just saying that sort of the feel of the game was
that
just
we
sort of impending doom. It was like even if we had scored, Sunderland would have scored again. I think. It was just one of those games where
everything went wrong.
I don't think there was any way we could have saved it by that point. I think it had just gone too far.
But I mean, I just think that bringing Walcott on the completely wrong decision, and I think, you know, our biggest problem up to that point had been lack of creativity. So, you know, what ends up happening is that we drop Van Persie deeper away from goal, which, you know, he's our best striker. We should put him, you know, we should get him into goal scoring opportunities, and we left Andre Alshavin and Yossi Benayoun on the bench, and I'm sure that both of them, or one of them, could have done something more than Walcott did, because, you know, Walcott's not the type of player who's going to change something if he doesn't get the ball. Whereas, and he wasn't getting the ball in the position that he was in, whereas I think Arshavin or Benayoun would have.
I think he could have stuck Arshavin in the same position that Walcott tried to play.
Yeah.
And I know I'm like the last remaining guy who's like, hey, we should play Arshavin in the middle behind the striker, but I still think, you know.
If
you're going to put Walcott there, you might as well put Arshavin there at that point.
It would have.
I guess I just sort of feel like if dropping Van Persie deeper and having him try to create wasn't going to work, I'm not certain that doing the same thing with Arshavin would work, because Arshavin's not better than Robin Van Persie. I mean, I don't know.
I also think that even if Van Persie created anything, I'm not sure if he had anyone who could score that chance. I don't think Walcott would have. I don't think Gervinho would have. I don't think Oxlade-Chamberlain. Well, he might have, but you know, I think
with the game he had yesterday, I think Oxlade-Chamberlain might have just kicked it at the moon. I mean, he was not very good.
And Gervinho actually had a shot that was on target. That was really good.
I think he was the only person on the team who did.
Question: is that Gervinho's first good shot of the season?
No. But it was his first good one in a while for Arsenal.
Yeah. Another option. I know he's not going to add much to goal scoring threat, but you know we're struggling against a team that's playing very deep. We start crossing balls into the box. The one thing that this guy's good at is, you know, the aerial, you know, aerial threat. So, you know, why wasn't Šemek brought on? And what does it say about Šemek and Park that a 34-year-old from MLS, Arsenal legend, you know, he is an Arsenal legend, but he's still a 34-year-old from MLS, and Theo Walcott, who hasn't played in the middle for 4 years, is preferred to Šemek and Park. What does it say about them?
Well, I mean, I don't think it says a whole lot that we haven't already been saying for a while, which is that
they're bad.
Park, nobody even knows what's going on with him, but Šemek isn't very good, but I don't know. To be fair, it's not like, I mean, Henri was good with us when he came on. I mean, we talk a lot about, like, he's 34 from the MLS, but, I mean, he scored 3 goals. I mean, he was pretty good when we used him. And honestly, he was only coming on as a substitute, but so it was in short spurts. But still, I mean, I don't know.
I think it says less about Park and Šemek being no good or useless. I guess it's a lot more about Thierry Henry just being really, 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 really good.
Yeah. But I do think it says something about both those players' confidence in themselves and more so the manager's confidence in them, which apparently doesn't exist at this point. I would really like an explanation from someone at some point about what the hell is going on with Ju Young Park. Like, why we have him, why he never plays, if he's real. Like, I don't get it. It's baffling. It's completely just mystifying to me. I don't think I've ever experienced a more mystifying player acquisition in my 24 years of life and sports fandom than this one.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
The only thing weirder I think I've ever heard of is Oliver Perez signing with a Major League Baseball team again.
Stop it.
Oliver Perez being paid $36 million. That's...
Yeah, but at least at that point there was like a small amount of evidence that he might not be total crap. Anyway, Oliver Perez eases the pain.
But I mean, imagine how crap it is to be Park. You know, you sign for Arsenal, you think, you know, hey, I'm gonna be
exciting.
You know, hey, this is Arsenal, man. You know, I've made it. He's played seven Premier League minutes.
And he has to go join the military in like a year and a half.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
yeah. He doesn't have much time.
I mean, at some point he has to go in the manager's office and say, play me or trade me. I mean, like, dude's only got like a year and a half left before he goes to the military, you're right. So, I mean, why waste this time not
in the prime
playing?
Of his career.
Of course, on the other hand, it looks like whenever he plays for the reserves, he's mostly invisible, so I don't know, maybe he's just not that good.
I don't know, that goal he scored against Bolton in the Carling Cup was really, really good.
It was, and then that's sort of what makes it even more confusing, is that, like, the one time he played, he looked pretty good.
And I mean, you know, we've seen him in the World Cup. He's not been he played for South Korea in South Africa, and he wasn't bad. You know, he was pretty good.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's not
it's
like
just weird.
It's very not like strange. He's Ali Dia. Southampton fans might get that reference, but.
For a second, I thought you said it's not like he's Ali G. I was like, no, that's also true.
That is also
Booyaka Shah.
Yeah.
Wait, we're not gonna have to pay because I said that, are we?
I think we are.
Damn.
Oh well, it was worth it.
Well, hey, at least if I get a cease and desist in the mail, it will mean that Sacha Baron Cohen listens to Fusillade.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Oliver Perez doesn't.
Yeah, well, if he try, with any luck, he'll just get mad and try and throw something at me because there's no way he'll be able to hit me. So yeah, that's. Let's talk about something else. this has been like the worst week ever.
I guess what's next?
Yeah. That's sort of what I was thinking, because when we were getting ready for this, my first thought was, okay, so we've had two crap games in a row, and I was pretty sure I knew what was coming next. But I was like, I'll look at the fixtures list just to make sure, and now we play Spurs next. So,
yep.
Awesome.
And in all honesty, I think that I'm not going to sort of predict anything because I'm not good at that. But if Arsenal struggle against or draw or lose, or actually draw would be okay, but if Arsenal actually lose to Spurs and play like they've been playing the last few days, I will probably never read a media source again in my life because it will just be unbearable.
I'm actually really glad that I'm going to be out in Albuquerque this weekend, because that means I'm not going to be tempted to be on Twitter during the game. Hopefully I will be somewhere working and or watching it actually. But we play Spurs, and honestly, based on our recent history with them the past year or so, and their form this year, and all that stuff, I have to say I'm really not all that optimistic about it. Which I hate to say, but I just have a bad feeling about this game. It is at home, so that helps. I think. Well, we'll at least have control over the state of the pitch, which is
good.
Yeah.
My right now is that, you know, after yesterday, Wenger was talking about how, you know, it was a decent performance, but everybody was gassed and really tired. So my hope is that he lets them rest a little bit this week. You know, obviously it's a longer week because they have an extra day off. But if that's really his only concern, then I hope that they show up fresher on Sunday.
Yeah.
I would hope that I don't want to say that I think our problem lately has been that we're not fired up or whatever. I don't think that's it. I just think we've been bad.
Bad.
But if they don't come out fired up to play Spurs at home, I don't know what's going to get it done. And
yeah.
I just hope that the fans help rather than hurting.
I'm sure they will, because you know, whatever you think about the manager, the state, whatever you think about the team, you know, it's Tottenham. You can't let, you know, you have to get behind the team against Tottenham. You don't want to give, you want to give those guys any satisfaction at all, so.
Right.
But I mean, I have never been less optimistic in my entire Arsenal supporting life, and you know, that's not that long, but you know, I do not think we're going to win, and I'm fairly concerned that it's going to be a bad performance, and it's going to have a bunch of fans fuming. It's going to be something that drains on the team. But, you know, I'm fairly...
The upsetting thing is that the last time we played Spurs earlier this season, right before our sort of golden era where we got back into the fourth place race, I honestly didn't think we played that badly, and I sort of felt like if we had played that same match at the Emirates, we would have come out in front. But my thought process at the time was, hey, I'm excited for the next one because I think we can get them. But at this point, I don't know. I don't want to sound delusional, but it's still not even that I think they're that much better than us. I mean, at this point, I think we all have to admit that they're a better team right now than Arsenal are. But it's not like they're not Barcelona. I mean, it's not like that. I don't have that much faith that we're going to play well. And I think if we play badly against a team that is good, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be Debbie Downer. If we're doing predictions, I don't think mine is going to be a good one. But on the other hand, I mean, I believe Koscielny should be back. So that should be a positive. Vermaelen if Gibbs is okay, which as far as I know he is, he should be playing on the left, and we should have Vermaelen and Koscielny in the middle. So I mean, I don't know. Sanya will be back, so our defense should be okay. So hopefully that'll help us keep him out somewhat. And I don't know. We could really use our offense breaking out. We could really use just a slump buster, I guess. I just don't know if it's going to come against them.
I'm not a sports psychologist by any means, and I don't even know that I really believe in a lot of psychology that much anyway. So I'm pretty serious when I say this. I really hope that Arsene Wenger gives the players like 3 days where they don't have to do a thing. Like where they don't have to think about football at all. And they need to get reminded that playing football is fun and creative and joyous again. Cause right now they're just like not having any fun at all.
Yeah. You know, following on to what Ted said, I know that people that read what I write and hear this podcast are probably going to get really tired of me comparing this to baseball, but you go back to a movie like Bull Durham where, you know, they're having a slump and they're playing badly. And what does Kevin Costner do? He says, let's go make it rain. And he gave him a night off, and you're exactly right. They need a couple days where they can just go hang out with their friends and forget about it and just live their lives a little bit and then come back and refocus and go again. You know, whether that helps or not, again, I'm also not a sports psychologist, but it can't hurt, you know, because what they're doing isn't working right now. So the challenge is what to do that will work.
Yeah, maybe they should like go out and just like get somebody arrested at a strip club or something like that. I mean, I feel like winning teams usually do that. So
yep. When you say get somebody arrested, do you mean like an innocent bystander?
Like, no, I mean like
somebody in a strip club.
No, I mean like Squillaci.
Or John like Smith, Almunia, you have been selected in the Arsenal get arrested at a strip club sweepstakes.
Actually, what they should get Park arrested, because at least that way he'd play a role.
If me getting arrested in a strip club is what it would take for Arsenal to shape up, I would certainly do that.
Way to take one for the team.
Maybe they're just really tired of eating a lot of like really healthy like chicken and rice and like dandelion greens. Maybe Wenger just needs to take them to Pizza Hut. When I was a kid, that's what my soccer teams always did after games.
I gotta tell you, at my house, my wife and I are on a diet, and so we're eating a lot better and doing stuff. And today we had nachos for lunch, and it was the best thing ever because they tasted so good. So I fully endorse that strategy.
I had Taco Bell for lunch today, and it was delicious.
Taco Bell's not food.
I don't care. It tastes good. Speaking of getting arrested, this is actually funny. I went out last night, and I don't know if... Well, no, there's a real thing here. It's actually even Arsenal-related.
It's like a story that starts, speaking of getting arrested, I went out last night.
Yeah. But as I was leaving, I still live at home, for those that haven't picked that up based on my Twitter account yet. As I was heading out the door, I mentioned to my mother, I had explained to her the Frimpong Piers Morgan Twitter war from that evening, because I thought it was hilarious and I needed to talk to somebody with words about it. And as I was going out the door, she said something along the lines of, be careful, don't get in any trouble or whatever, which, I mean, I don't ever, so that I don't know why that was a thing. But my response was, the only way I would get arrested tonight is if I run into Piers Morgan and I punch him in the face. And if that happens, I will just start a Kickstarter and every Arsenal fan will probably pay to get me bailed out of jail.
Absolutely.
So,
I cannot think of a more...
Maybe we should just have Frimpong fight Piers Morgan, and that would be the slump buster. There it is. That would be the densest slump buster ever.
I want to say something, but I don't want to get the podcast into legal problems, so I'll hold off.
you weren't gonna like start singing a Metallica song, were you?
No, I was gonna say Piers Morgan's probably already hacked Frimpong's phone.
Boom! It's out there now.
I'm not a huge Piers Morgan fan,
At least one thing is that Spurs drew against Stevenage Town 0-0 today in the FA Cup, so they're not exactly in sparkling form either. Although Stevenage played incredibly negatively, so.
Well, they're managed by Gary Smith, so, you know, it's almost a given.
Spurs play their first team?
They played Bale, Defoe, Saha, Danny Rose, Kyle Walker.
Wait, Danny Rose?
Yeah, he actually still exists.
Did he score?
No. They played Scott.
That means he's still sitting on, like, what?
One goal.
One league goal.
Yeah.
I guess not in the league, but one goal career.
They played Scott Parker. They played Dawson Cabal and Ryan Nelson. So, I mean, they played a good seven players, so I think we'll get into their first team.
Well, that's, I would say it's not a good sign for them, but at least they didn't lose 2-0, so.
All we need to do is play exactly like Stevenage did. Should be easy.
Exactly.
So we should play every defensive player we have?
We should hit.
Are we actually going to cross the limb and do predictions, or no?
My prediction is that we are going to have 11 players on the pitch stacked like cordwood in the face of the goal and just hope that nobody falls over and leaves a hole for them to kick the ball in, and just do that for 90 minutes. No one will draw. That's not what's actually going to happen. I don't really want to make a real prediction, but I'm just going to stick with that. 0-0 draw, cordwood.
I had a dream that Thierry Henry came back for a third time. I think he's still registered, so this theoretically could happen. So, you know, he came back and scored the winning goal against Tottenham. And then I woke up, so. I'm going to go with that prediction, because I literally have no idea. You know, I think it's very hard to make a prediction today, based on the fact that we haven't looked good, but we're going to have a week off. We're going to have a week. You know, we'll probably get Laurent Koscielny back. We should have Kieran Gibbs at left back. We'll have a week where our defense can re-meet each other again.
They can all be handshakes and introductions.
Exactly.
Little name tags.
We have another week for Gervinho to realize that, you know, he's back with Arsenal, so he can, you know, be somewhat good and not like he was for the Ivory Coast and miss penalties. So, you know, I think we'll know a lot more about this team Friday afternoon than we will today. So I'm just going to go with my dream prediction that Thierry Henry comes back and scores.
I like it.
And Ben does. And then they have to make another statue.
Paul, what do you,
I didn't have any crazy dreams, and you stole the cordwood thing that I was thinking about, but maybe you didn't steal it, but, you know, that's the best idea. So I'll, you know, I'm actually going to go out on a limb and say that I don't know what's going to happen. How's that for taking a risk? It really could, you know, like Aiden was saying, it's too early right now, and I think if you were to ask me right now, I would say that either it will be a 1-1 draw or that Arsenal will lose like 4-0 again. So I don't know at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of why I didn't want to make a prediction, because I am afraid that my prediction right now would be like 3-1 loss, and I hate predicting that. So,
yep.
Ted, what do you have?
Well, seeing as how I was the guy who said that I thought we had a really good chance of winning, like outright winning in Milan, and then I was treated to what might be the worst Arsenal performance of the past half decade.
Nice going.
I don't know if I don't know if anybody should listen to anything I say as far as predictions, not to mention the fact that this team is just out of their minds, schizophrenic at this point. Here's what I'm going to predict. Spurs are going to probably win 2-1, but it's going to be surprising because it's not actually going to be a football match. It's going to be a best 2 out of 3 team scrabble. just in the middle, just in the center circle. It would just be Gareth Bale and Robin Van Persie with support from their team.
No, the real surprise is that the winning word will be played actually by Harry Redknapp, who, as we all know, doesn't actually know how to read or write.
Well, he has a real handicap when he plays Scrabble because he does not actually use the letter H ever. So, you know, that's 4 points lost. That's 4 points lost right there.
I honestly have no idea what's going to happen on Sunday. Nothing would surprise me.
One thing that I'd kind of like to bring up, because this has been going around the blog, just, you know, considering recent events. If we win, is all forgiven for the last 2 weeks? You know, does the fact that we lost to Milan, the fact that we lost to Sunderland, is that forgiven if we beat Spurs?
I don't think it's forgiven, but it's definitely forgotten for the short term. Because it'll be league points, which are good, but there are still problems that need to be addressed. So I think it buys a little more credit, it buys a little more time, but I don't think everything should be forgiven, necessarily.
Personally, I'm a big proponent of you're never as good as you are when you're good, and you're never as bad as you are when you're bad. So I think I basically agree with Paul. I mean, if we win this game, it means that we aren't as bad as everybody thinks we are, myself included. But it doesn't mean that we're the greatest team on the face of the earth. It's something that happens a lot in sports and has been happening with us lately, is that I feel like whenever we win, the fans sort of go out of their minds happy, and whenever we lose, everybody wants to tar and feather Arsene Wenger and run out of London on a rail. And I really don't think either one is rationally appropriate. Obviously, those reactions are completely understandable, and I wouldn't really fault people for having them. But I don't think that everything's forgiven if we beat Spurs. I just think it means we got 3 points, we beat our rival, and we sort of stopped the bleeding, and we have a platform to go forward.
I mean, one more thing. Theoretically, if we do beat them, we're only 7 points back. You know, they still have a lot of difficult games left. More difficult than we do, and you know, they are Spurs. They have a history of imploding hilariously from our point of view. So, you know, if we win, there's hope that we could finish ahead of them. And I think that, you know, that would be, after the summer that we had, after the season that we've had this year, I think that would be a big morale booster just for the fans. So.
Yeah, I just
keep the record intact.
I don't think it's a particularly likely outcome. No. I don't think the institutional memory in this case is really going to have a huge effect. I don't think today's Spurs players care about what's happened in the past. Just like I don't think that the fact that we were invincible less than a decade ago really helps us now. But on the other hand, it would really, I think, cheer up some people if Spurs were to completely fall apart.
We have to defer, at this point, we have to defer any sort of worry about the problems with Wenger's management, problems with the squad. The only thing right now that anybody should be worried about, as far as I can tell, is fourth place. Like, that's the only. And if we win on Sunday, it's 3 more points getting us closer to fourth place.
Sure.
I don't think we can worry about catching Spurs right now. I don't think we can worry about what's going to happen in the future right now. In a sense, if we do win on Sunday, I do think all is forgiven, at least temporarily, because our primary goal at this moment will be as fulfilled as possible.
Good point. And as we've said on this podcast, as Gunner Blog pointed out today, this season's aim was always to finish in the top four. You know, anything else was going to be a bonus. And, you know, considering the fact that half of our team is assembled on the last day of the transfer window, considering the fact that all of our fullbacks have been injured and we've had a good number of injuries, you know, to finish fourth would be a real achievement. And I think that, you know, I thought it was going to be unlikely that we won anything this year.
Although it's interesting that you say that, because I agree 100%. But and I certainly, probably less than other Arsenal supporters, care about Spurs. I don't really care if they're better than us. That doesn't bother me as much as it bothers some other people. But at the beginning of the year, while the goal was to finish in the top four, if there had been a little asterisk next to that that said, oh, by the way, the three teams above you will include Tottenham Hotspur, I think everybody would have been like, oh, wait, no, sorry, we have to win the league. Nobody would have, But like I said, I don't really care, so.
And the really positive thing about the race for fourth is that I think a lot of people are sort of looking at it like we're really the underdogs in this because we're a very flawed team. And I don't disagree that we're a very flawed team, but I think a lot of people forget that the other teams in this race are as well.
True.
Newcastle just got utterly dismantled by Spurs a week or so ago.
And they've been,
Liverpool,
I mean, they...
Liverpool and Chelsea are almost mirror images of us, except that we don't, as far as I know, have any racists. We're not that bad. It sort of goes back to my point earlier. We're not as bad as we seem when we're bad, and the other teams around us aren't that much better than us if they are. Like, I don't think that like Chelsea are better than us. I don't think Liverpool are better than us. I don't think Newcastle are better than us. They may finish above us, but it's sort of a situation where I could see those teams falling in any sort of order.
Sure.
I mean, the thing about Newcastle is that, they were briefly up above ahead of us, but they've kind of been, regressing to the mean for quite a few weeks now. They conceded 5 against Spurs, they conceded 5 against Fulham, it's starting to fall apart for them.
Yeah, and I really hope it doesn't completely. I'd really like it if they made it into Europe, although I would prefer it if it was the Europa League.
And not at the expense of us. Yeah.
I guess what I want to say is don't lose hope.
That seems like a pretty good place to start to wrap it up.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
It's nice. I like it.
Such a rousing bunch.
Yeah, it's basically this week's message is, sure, everything that's come before is total crap, but the future might not be total crap, so...
It's just funny you say, don't lose hope, and then there's like 8 seconds of silence.
I got momentarily sidetracked. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Fusillade. As always, I would like to thank the band Mid American for allowing us graciously the use of their song All Is Gone as our sort of theme song. Check them out on various internet websites. Everybody knows I like websites.
Can we also check them out on non-internet websites?
Well, if you live in Indiana, you could see them live and stuff, but I think there's only I think there's one other person that I've seen on Short Fuse who's from Indiana who I've seen comment occasionally, and I cannot remember his name right now. I don't think they're doing any nationwide tours or anything like that anytime soon, but hey, a guy can dream. There's that. Guys, any closing statements?
Not from me.
Nothing.
Not from me.
All right. Also, once again, we haven't gotten to this today because we were sort of doing postmortems. But don't forget that you can send in questions and comments and stuff to the podcast at the email address fusilladecast@gmail.com. Hopefully at some point we'll be able to get into a little more sort of regular rhythm where we aren't constantly bemoaning our team's inefficiencies and other sundry stuff like that. Once again, thanks for listening. And I'm Thomas Wachtel.
I'm Paul DeBruyler.
I'm Ian Gibson.
I'm Ted Harwood.
And as always, up the Arsenal.